Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, when we look at like the broad sweep of human evolution, there's always one question that just towers above the rest. How did the human brain get so incredibly big and complex compared to our closest primate relatives?
Yeah, it really is the ultimate biological mystery, right? For a long time, the assumption, or I guess maybe just the hope, was that we would eventually find this clean, elegant genetic switch.
Right, like a perfect, pristine mutation.
Exactly, a pristine mutation that just sort of leveled up our cognition overnight.
But the surprising reality is so much messier than that, isn't it? I mean, the secret to our advanced cognition doesn't lie in some stable gene. It actually lies in a highly unstable, stuttering region of our DNA that's just constantly duplicating and breaking and rearranging itself.
Oh, absolutely. It's a highly chaotic genomic environment. You can think of it as a genetic construction zone that, you know, never quite shuts down.
Yeah, which leads to a pretty profound question for this deep dive. What really happens when the genetic mistakes that gave us our unique intellect are the exact same ones causing rare genetic disorders today?
That tension between incredible evolutionary innovation on one hand and, well, severe disease susceptibility on the other, that's really what we're exploring today.
Right.
And today we celebrate the work of Taylor D. Real, Andrew B. Strigaches, Evany Eichler, and their colleagues at the University of Washington and UC Santa Cruz, who have advanced our understanding of human-specific gene evolution.
Okay, let's unpack this. We need to start with the baseline biology to understand what's actually happening in this genetic construction zone.
Sure.
Like, what is this stuttering region of DNA and what is it supposed to be doing?
So, to understand the stutter, we have to look at a biological signaling pathway called NOTCH2.
Okay.
This is a super ancient cellular communication system. It's fundamental to how cells decide what they're going to become during embryonic development.
Yeah.
But in human evolution, something really dramatic happened.
What happened?
A massive chunk of DNA containing a partial copy of that NOTCH2 gene essentially copy-pasted itself into a totally new location in the genome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this created an entirely new gene family known as NOTCH2NL, which stands for NOTCH2N terminus-like.
Wait, so a random copy-paste mistake essentially built the human brain? Because that sounds almost too simple.
It does sound so boring.
Or like, what is this new duplicated gene actually doing to our brain cells to make the cortex physically larger?
Well, it all comes down to the precise role these NOTCH2NL genes play in the developing fetal brain. Early on in brain development, you have these progenitor cells called radial glia.
Right, those are like the stem cells of the brain, right?
Exactly. You can think of them as the stem cells.
Right.
Their normal job is to divide a few times and then differentiate, meaning they transform into mature functioning neurons.
So they're the raw material.
They are the raw material, yes. But when the NOTCH2NL proteins are introduced into the system, they interact with that original NOTCH2 communication pathway and actually change the instructions.
Change them how?
They basically tell these progenitor radial glia to hold off on becoming mature neurons. Instead, they instruct them to prioritize self-renewal.
So instead of making a functional neuron right away, the cell just makes more copies of itself. It's like expanding the physical size of a factory and building hundreds of new assembly lines before you actually start manufacturing the final product.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. Yeah.
Yeah.
By delaying that final differentiation step, you build a vastly larger pool of these progenitor cells.
Which means more output later.
Exactly. When those cells finally do get the signal to differentiate, they generate a massive expansion of the neuronal mass in the human cortex.
Wow.
It literally provides a direct cellular mechanism for building a physically bigger, denser brain.
Okay, so this genetic stutter literally gave us the raw brain power we rely on. But I mentioned earlier that this same region is linked to rare disorders.
Yeah, it is.
If this is the engine of our intelligence, how do we get from brain expansion to genetic disease?
Right, so it comes down to the physical architecture of the genome itself. When you have large, nearly identical blocks of duplicated DNA sitting right next to each other on a chromosome, well, it creates a highly unstable environment.
Because they look so similar.
Exactly. During cell division, chromosomes have to line up and swap genetic material to create diversity. It's a totally normal process called crossing over.
Right.
But because these duplicated NOTCH2NL regions look exactly alike, the cellular machinery gets confused. Mm-hmm. The chromosomes can easily misalign. And this leads to something called unequal crossing over.
Meaning one chromosome accidentally grabs extra copies of these crucial brain-building genes, and the other chromosome loses them entirely. It's like a zipper where the teeth get mismatched.
Oh, that zipper analogy hits the nail on the head. And this structural instability leads directly to microdeletion and microduplication syndromes.
Because they're so prone to tearing or misaligning?
Yeah, because these regions are like 99% identical, they're incredibly prone to this physical misalignment. And this translates to very real clinical realities.
Like which conditions?
Specifically conditions like 1q21.1 distal deletion and duplication syndromes, TAR syndrome, and Alagille syndrome.
And what do those conditions actually look like for a patient?
They can be characterized by significant developmental delays, microcephaly, where the brain is atypically small, or macrocephaly, where it is unusually large.
Wow, that's severe.
Yeah, alongside other severe physical and cognitive consequences.
So if this specific region of chromosome 1 is so crucial, both to human evolution and to these devastating genetic disorders, why haven't we mapped it out perfectly before now?
Well, the short answer is that standard sequencing technologies absolutely fail when faced with these highly repetitive regions.
Really?
Yeah. Traditional short-read sequencing works by chopping the DNA into tiny fragments, maybe a few hundred letters long. The sequencer reads them, and then a computer tries to reassemble them by finding overlapping sequences.
Right, but if you are looking at massive duplicated regions that are 99% identical, I mean, it's like trying to put together a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle where every single piece is just identical blue sky.
Exactly.
You simply cannot tell where anything goes.
You can't. You're left with massive gaps in the data. So to break this short read barrier, the researchers had to leverage next generation technology.
Which is what?
Near complete long read assemblies. They used data from the Human Pangenome Reference Consortium, looking at 70 human haploid genomes. And to compare, they used 12 ape haploid genomes from the Telomere to Telomere Consortium.
Okay, let's clarify haploid for a second.
Yeah.
We normally have two sets of chromosomes, one from each parent. But a haploid genome means they're looking at just a single set of chromosomes, right?
Yeah, that's a vital distinction.
Yeah.
By looking at a single, unmixed set of chromosomes, they avoid the chaotic overlapping signals of maternal and paternal DNA.
That makes sense.
And because they are using long read sequencing, they aren't looking at tiny fragments. They are looking at massive, contiguous blocks of the genome, tens of thousands of letters long.
So instead of trying to tape together tiny blue sky puzzle pieces, they are looking at large chunks of the puzzle already assembled.
Exactly. And that allowed them to finally see the true structural differences.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where it gets really innovative. They didn't stop at just reading the linear DNA sequence. They wanted to see the 3D regulatory architecture, like how the DNA is actually packaged and utilized by the living cell.
Right.
To do this, they utilized a technology called FiberSeq.
Yeah, I found this part of the methodology fascinating. If you imagine DNA not just as a flat string of letters on a page, but as a tightly wound ball of yarn inside the nucleus, FiberSeq essentially unspools that yarn.
Yes.
It allows researchers to see exactly which parts of the DNA are physically exposed and accessible to the cell's reading machinery, even deep within these highly identical duplicated regions.
Right, and to build on your yarn metaphor, the spool that the DNA wraps around is made of histone proteins.
Okay.
If the DNA is tightly wound around those histones, the genes in that region are effectively turned off because the cell's machinery can't reach them.
Because they're hidden.
Exactly. But if the chromatin is open and accessible, regulatory proteins can bind and the gene can be expressed. FiberSeq lets them map this accessibility on single, long molecules of DNA.
And to see how this all works in living tissue, they went a step further, right? They applied a technique called ISOSeq to human dorsal forebrain organoids.
They did?
Which ISOSeq sequences the full-length RNA transcripts, meaning it looks at the final instructions the cell actually produces, not just the DNA blueprint.
Right.
They grew these brain organoids from a specific human sample named HG02630. But hold on, I need to challenge this approach.
Sure, go ahead.
We are trying to understand millions of years of human brain evolution, right? And we're using a tiny clump of stem cells grown in a Petri dish. How does a lab-grown organoid actually prove anything about ancient brain expansion?
No, it's a completely valid skepticism. I mean, an organoid is obviously not a fully formed human brain thinking thoughts in a dish.
Right.
However, in this specific context, It is arguably the most accurate biological model we have. Cerebral cortex organoids perfectly model the very early window of fetal brain development.
Oh.
And that specific window of time is exactly when NOTCH2NL is most highly expressed.
So it captures the exact moment that factory expansion of radial glia is taking place.
Yes. For observing the regulatory landscape and the RNA transcripts of these specific genes in a human context, the organoid provides a front row seat to the very developmental stage that separates us from other primates.
Okay, the methodology makes sense. We've got the long read tools cutting through the blue sky puzzle, and we've got the organoid modeling the fetal brain.
Right.
What did they actually find when they compared the ape genomes to the human genomes?
What's fascinating here is that the initial NOTCH2NL duplication wasn't a unique one-time event that only happened to humans.
Wait, really?
Yeah, these duplications actually occurred independently in multiple great ape lineages, like gorillas and chimpanzees, around 8 to 15 million years ago.
Wait, so other apes have these duplicated genes too? We aren't the only ones with a genetic stutter here.
They do. The ancestral primate genome was already highly unstable in this region. But here is the critical difference.
Okay.
The human lineage, which emerged around 4.9 million years ago, is the only lineage to produce stable protein-coding copies of NOTCH2NL.
Why is that? What makes our copies functional while the ape copies are basically just evolutionary dead ends?
It comes down to a tiny, incredibly specific mutation. The functional human copies have a 4-base pair deletion in the final exon, which is the very tail end of the gene.
Just 4 missing letters out of billions in the genome.
Yeah, those 4 missing letters change everything. Because the cellular machinery reads DNA in sets of 3, deleting 4 letters shifts the entire reading frame for the rest of the sequence.
Oh.
It fundamentally modifies the final 19 or 20 amino acids at the C-terminus, the tail end of the resulting protein. That exact modification removes a signal that would otherwise cause the protein to degrade.
So it keeps it alive.
Exactly. It is absolutely essential for the protein to remain stable in the cell. The non-human apes lack this deletion, so their transcripts generally produce unstable proteins that get broken down, or they fuse randomly with other genes.
4 base pairs, and it's the difference between a functional brain-expanding protein and a total dud. Biology really is won and lost in the margins.
It really is.
Okay, so humans have the functional copies, but when the researchers looked deeply at those 70 human genomes, they didn't just find a static uniform picture across all of us, did they?
Not at all. They found massive haplotype diversity among humans.
Mm-hmm.
These duplicated regions are still actively rewriting themselves through a process called interlocus gene conversion, or IGC.
IGC, okay.
In fact, they've observed IGC in 42% of the human haplotypes they analyzed.
Let's make sure we understand interlocus gene conversion, because it's a wild concept. Wait, so the genome is essentially rewriting itself? How does that even happen?
It goes back to that physical instability we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You have these duplicated genes sitting near each other, and because their sequences are almost identical, the genome's natural DNA repair mechanisms get confused.
Right.
When a tiny break happens in one gene, the repair proteins look for a template to fix it. But they accidentally grab the sequence of the neighboring duplicated gene.
So it's like an autocorrect feature run amok.
Exactly. The cell ends up fixing one gene by literally copying and pasting the text of its neighbor right over it.
Wow.
Yes. And this dynamic ongoing process led the researchers to a major discovery. A brand new paralog, or duplicate gene, in the human genome, which they named NOTCH2TV, standing for truncated version.
A new gene.
Yeah. NOTCH2TV arose when a known pseudogene, which is a broken non-functional copy called NOTCH2NLR, was caught in one of these interlocus gene conversion events. Its sequence was overwritten to perfectly match the ancestral original NOTCH2 gene.
But if NOTCH2TV now looks exactly like the original NOTCH2 at the beginning and has the exact same promoter sequence to turn it on, shouldn't it function just like the original? Shouldn't this gene conversion have resurrected it into a fully functional gene?
You would certainly think so, and that's exactly the hypothesis the researchers tested. But remember that crucial 4-base pair deletion we discussed.
Right, the one at the very end of the gene that makes the human protein stable by changing the tail end.
Exactly. While the front end of NOTCH2TV matches the original NOTCH2 perfectly, the gene conversion event didn't span the entire length of the gene. The conversion stopped short.
Oh, so it didn't finish.
Right. The tail end, the C-terminus, remained completely unchanged. It still lacks that crucial 4 base pair deletion.
Ah, I see. So it's like printing a brilliant new instruction manual, but ripping out the last page. The instructions start out great, but without the final steps, the whole assembly line breaks down.
That captures the mechanics perfectly. Because it lacks that specific deletion, the resulting protein remains completely unstable. So despite its shiny new front end, NOTCH2TV remains a pseudogene. It cannot form a stable protein product.
Okay, but the researchers went even deeper than just looking at the DNA sequence, right? They looked at the regulatory landscapes using that FiberSec technology.
They did.
Humans have 3 main functional copies of this gene, NOTCH2NLA, B, and C. They are nearly identical in their actual coding sequence, but FiberSec show that they have unique, paralog-specific, accessible chromatin elements.
Meaning they each occupy distinct 3D genomic environments. The spooling of the DNA is different for each one.
Right.
And this structural difference translates to massive differences in how heavily they are expressed in the cell. NOTCH2NLA is particularly special here.
Why is that?
They found it's present in every single human haplotype tested. And together, NOTCH2NLA and NOTCH2NLB have 3 times higher transcript abundance in the developing brain than the other copies.
So even though the genes themselves are practically identical twins, the control panels operating them are completely different.
Exactly.
And NOTCH2NLA seems to be the heavy lifter. It's fixed in the population, it's always present, and it's highly expressed. So what does this all mean when we zoom out?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we are looking at one of the most profound evolutionary trade-offs in the history of our species.
A trade-off?
Yeah. The human lineage essentially accepted a massive mutational burden. We tolerate this extreme genomic instability, which, as we discussed, leads to devastating microdeletion syndromes, developmental delays, and conditions like 1Q21.1 syndrome.
Right.
We accept all of that severe genetic risk in exchange for the immense benefit of cortical expansion.
It's a staggering genetic gamble. And what's wild to me is that this isn't just ancient history. We usually think of evolution as something that happened millions of years ago and stopped, but this part of our genome is actively shifting right now.
It is actively evolving. The fact that we see biased gene conversion actively favoring NOTCH2NLA at the expense of NOTCH2NLB across human populations today suggests active evolutionary constraint.
Wow.
Yeah, this region is still under intense selective pressure to maintain that specific brain-building gene. This is ongoing evolution happening in the human population as we speak.
We do need to talk about the boundaries of the study, though. FiberSec is an amazing tool for mapping out that 3D spooling, but it definitely has limits.
It does, yeah. FiberSec measures chromatin accessibility. It tells us if the DNA is unspooled. It tells us if the door is open.
Right.
But it does not tell us if the elements binding to that open DNA are enhancers that are turning genes on or repressors that are actively turning them off. Yeah. It doesn't tell us who is walking through the door.
Right. So the next steps for the field would be functionally characterizing these 3D environments. We need to figure out exactly what these accessible regions are doing to the expression of these genes in real time. If you're listening to this right now and thinking this is just abstract ancient history, it's actually not. The very brain architecture allowing you to process this conversation right now is built on this exact genetic house of cards. The intelligence required to sequence genomes, to create brain organoids, to listen to a deep dive, all of it comes from a genetic stutter that could collapse into a rare disease with a single unequal crossing over.
Yeah, to summarize the core findings, the expansion of the human brain is fundamentally tied to the NOTCH2NL gene family, which emerged through highly unstable, human-specific segmental duplications. Driven by unique regulatory landscapes and ongoing gene conversion, these genetic regions represent a profound evolutionary trade-off between cognitive advancement and genetic disease susceptibility.
What does this mean for our future understanding of neurodevelopmental disorders, knowing they are the direct byproduct of the very evolutionary leaps that made us uniquely human? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. In the bright room.
we map what used to hide. Mirror made instructions running side by side. Copies split and drift where ancient seams align. Same old signal, newly rearranged design. Some are everywhere, some blink in and out. Numbers change like weather, leaving room for doubt. And in the borrowed letter swap from strand to strand, a new name appears like ink on lifted hands. Hear the duplicated light in the open chromated air. Different doors, different keys, different songs in there. One stays steady, one will fade, one breaks then learns to bind. We don't share one destiny, we're versions of a mind. Long red frames, the timeline closer than we knew. Not one single origin, more than one debut. Four brain worlds in glass show what the scaffolds mean. We're the accessible whisper shape. What will be seen but a transcript? And promise and a promise isn't stone. Some make fragile proteins that can't stand on their own. Still the pattern teaches structure, script and space. How change can write a future on a duplicated face. Hear the duplicated light in the open chromated air. Different doors, different keys, different songs in there. From the shifting colors